You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to the Hall of Fame podcast, sponsored by One Truck America. That's onetruck.us. Hey, before every podcast, as you know, we give you an industry update. This one is fairly simple. Not a whole lot of change since my last update. Still expecting a so-so year. We're going to see some recovery, but not a great recovery. We expect about a 2% rate increase. But with that said, we got some earning release that came out. We had Hub Group came out. Obviously, declined profits in Q4. We had Werner came out. The client profits in Q4, and we expect to see that over everyone that does their release in the next month or so. A pretty big release also is Trump has suspended charging stations that the government were going to put up for electric cars. I know you wonder, well, why is electric cars matters? Because it ties right into electric trucks. So Nikola is also having issues with purchases, and they are facing some bankruptcy. So I think the whole EV truck thing is kind of, as we talked before, it's teetering right now. And I think there's just not enough electricity in the infrastructure to fully get behind electric trucks. I think more and more people are believing that may not be the long-term solution. I don't want to make a judgment on that. I think that's something you have to decide on your own. But other than that, I'd expect a lot more updates, because by the time we do the next podcast, we'll have tons of releases and a lot more idea of where this year is going. 2025, still slow. I don't expect to be as bad as 2024 or 2023. So expect a slow and minor recovery, and then I expect a great 2026. So thank you for the update and have a great day. This is Ken Miller, the host of the Hall of Fame podcast. Welcome to the Hall of Fame. We have a special guest today, Michael from Kodiak. He's going to talk a lot about autonomous vehicles and some of that technology that his company is developing, or really has developed. I think this technology has been coming our way for quite some years. I remember spending about a year and a half working and looking at the technology, looking at it, not working on it. I'm not an engineer. In 2017 through 19. So I'm excited to hear what he has to say. Michael, we're going to start. Just give us an introduction. Tell us about your company. Take as much time as you need to give some background of what you want to talk about. And then we'll just shoot some questions. So the mic's yours, sir.
Well, awesome. First of all, thanks so much for having me, Ken. It's a pleasure talking to you today. So my name is Michael. I'm Vice President of Commercialization at Kodiak, basically responsible for everything from interacting initially with customers to actually deploying a product to them. And the product, what is a product? It's an autonomous truck, a truck that drives itself. Kodiak has been working on that since 2018. Really in three segments. So we developed autonomous driving technology on a common platform that can be used for over-the-road trucking, that can be used for industrial kind of off-highway applications, and is also already in use by the U.S. Army as we are working with the DoD here. So really have built an amazing stack that is not, you know, overfitted to one specific use case. It can be applied to different verticals. It can do a lot of things. It can, you know, help make transportation safer, help keep people out of harm's way. And I have to say, we're just getting started. So kind of, you know, we will explore additional areas that we can apply that to.
Okay, so you are developing a technology. So are you, and as we get into this, are you now going to sell it to like a major manufacturer, maybe a Volvo, Freightliner? Is that the plan? And then they install your technology within it itself? Is that the idea?
So the way we currently work is there is a business today, but then there's a business in the future and it changes slightly. So today we basically operate on for example, the over-the-road business. We operate trucks and we provide a freight transportation service, right? So we operate for, you know, different carriers, different shippers, and we basically provide a freight transportation service to them. That's not how the future is going to work, because eventually we want to be a technology provider, right? And as such, we actually want to provide the virtual driver as a service, if you will. So that means the carrier will still buy the truck. We will then work together with the OEM, with tier ones, to turn the truck into a self-driving capable truck. And then we provide the, you know, the autonomy stack, the self-driving system, basically. And they can then operate the trucks as a self-driving truck. So that's really how the future is going to work. And that doesn't mean we just hand the truck over and never talk to them again, right? That's not how it works. Basically, we will always be there to support. So we have a 24/7 operations center where we can always, you know, interact with the truck, where we can see, hey, what are those trucks doing? What's the health status? If anything would ever go wrong, the truck basically can reach out to the op center and we can then interact with the carrier's dispatch center and say, oh, this truck has a flat tire, for example. We need to send somebody to actually change that tire, right? So it is, we provide the driver as a service, but that includes a lot of things, including kind of some remote support and being able to always make sure that we have access to those trucks and can, you know, can highlight any issues or any support that's needed.
Okay, it's a little better. So if I was a fleet today and you could run autonomous truck freely, I had 30 trucks, I would come to you and say, okay, can you equip my trucks one? And then I would then pay some type of service for you to tell me, hey, there's something going on here. You're burning 2 miles a gallon and you should be burning 6. So there may be a leakage there, or there's a flat, or any of those things. So your control center would then send it to my dispatch. Hey, what's wrong with this truck? Has a flat, so forth. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's generally right. Now, there is two ways, right? We will always see everything that is going on the truck, right? And we basically see what's the health status of the truck itself, all the information that's kind of living on the CAN bus, right? We have access to. Mm-hmm. But we will also see what's the health status of our autonomy system, right? For example, now, do we get all the data from our cameras, from our radars, from our LiDAR sensors, or would there be anything wrong? And in case there would be anything wrong, we can send somebody to support that truck, right? In your example about fuel efficiency, that would be detected by us, but that might also be actually detected by the fleet's dispatch center, right? Because they still have access. They still see, you know, where those trucks are operating, how they're operating from an MPG perspective. And they could at some point say, hey, I have seen this truck is not operating based on specs, right? Let's actually dive into this. Most likely, we will know before them, right? Because we have access to so much data on the truck. But, you know, it's not like they don't see the trucks anymore. Right? It's still their truck. They still kind of are responsible for telling it to go from A to B.
So you're controlling the driver. They're controlling the truck.
Okay. Exactly.
That makes total sense. All right. So let's rewind a little bit. So I got deep into the weeds, and I'm not an engineer. I was an economics major in college, so I'm not going to get me into the weeds for anyone. I got deep into looking into autonomous truck. And again, there was a company, and they slipped my name, that did the test. I think they did it in 2017 or 18, where they drove a truck from LA all the way to New York autonomously. And they sped up the video, so it lasts about 3 minutes. They slow it down and you're going over certain things like, I forgot what, the George Washington Bridge to get to New York, things of that nature. And the guy was clear to me that the technology was here for autonomous search, especially in an OTR environment. And when I say OTR, I mean over the road, where there are several lanes that you could run from, let's say Atlanta to Dallas, and you're one exit off of DC to the next exit of the DC. We're not really running in much cities. That's a pretty simple highway run. And there's several lanes like that that I can think about. So do you believe this technology is here? It's ready to go. We could release it today if legislation allowed you to?
Yeah. So there is, you have to look at it in different use cases. Okay. So on the public road use case, over the road trucking, the technology is there, but there's still validation work to do, right? So what we currently work through is what it's called the safety case. And that's a word that some people might have heard before. It's in simple terms, it's kind of a statistical analysis to prove that the truck is safer than the average human truck driver. That's what we have to prove. There's a lot of technicalities behind how that's working, statistics, probabilities, and so on. So I'm not going to get into that, but that's what we have to prove to ourselves, right? Because we say we need to be safer in order to actually launch fully without a driver.
Yes.
That still needs some work for over the road. Now, in the industrial use case, which is on private roads, which is where we are currently operating in the Permian Basin in West Texas, there we have already completed that work. So we already operate without a driver there. Yeah. Because we went through all of that analysis, because we worked, you know, proving it to ourselves, showing it to the customer, showing it to everyone who is involved, we can already operate driverlessly there.
Okay, so if you're operating obviously on private roads, I get it. The oil company's on a lot of line there. It's really a matter of legislation because that's holding it on the highway. Or do you think there are more trickier issues once you get off the exit that are a little more tricky than a highway?
So it's actually not a legislative issue.
Okay.
If you look at the US and all the 50 states, there isn't a federal framework, right? There's no nationwide framework for autonomous trucks, but there are 25 states that already allow driverless operations.
Yes. Right?
So there's, those states are mostly in the Sun Belt, which is, of course, also from a weather perspective, very interesting. There's a lot of dense freight lanes in the Sun Belt. So basically, where we are going to launch is on routes like Dallas to Atlanta, right? Phoenix to Dallas, even coast to coast at some point. Now, I will say California is one of the states that does not yet allow fully driverless operations. But really, east of California, all of the states, shocking, I know. East of California, all of the states in the Sun Belt actually already allow it. So it's really not the legislative framework that is holding us back. It's really just the validation work that we have to do to prove it to ourselves. And when I say prove it to ourselves, of course, it's important to be transparent with other constituents, like drivers, like the fleet managers, right? Everyone wants to understand, okay, how good is it? How does it compare to a human-driven truck, right? So, of course, that work that we do there, we want to publicize and, you know, talk about, hey, this is what we have done. This is the framework what we have worked through. We are good to go. And that's kind of more the steps that we have to take. So it's really not external. It's mostly internal.
Just so you know, one of the busiest freight lanes is Houston to Dallas. And that's why Texas has a special law that allows you to drive 12 hours in order to turn that lane, which you wouldn't need to with an autonomous driver. So talk about a great lane to test it on in a state that's open to things of this nature. Why Tesla has moved there. Probably not a bad lane to start on.
Yeah, so we actually drive Dallas to Houston several times a day for several different customers. One of them is IKEA. There are many, many others that we actually drive it for. It is a perfect test lane for the exact reasons that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Today, and let's be clear, we still have a safety driver in there on our public and over-the-road operations, right? Mm-hmm. So we still need to follow hours of service rules. So that's why Dallas to Houston is, of course, such an interesting lane, because we can turn it and we bring the driver home, right? Because essentially we want our safety drivers to be home. Dallas to Atlanta, on the other hand, we operate with teams, right? We actually have team drivers in there. And the thing why Dallas to Atlanta is so interesting, because if you think about the long-term vision, what do we actually want to kind of support our customers, the fleets on? It is the lanes where they have issues to staff, right? Because of the driver shortage. And we all know that long haul trucking, of course, there are still people who enjoy that job, but it's not the same job anymore as like 20, 30 years ago, where everyone wanted to do it. It kind of meant freedom, right? It just changed a little bit. And today it's hard to find those. So we actually work with our fleet customers and say, okay, let's analyze your network. Let's actually discuss where do autonomous trucks make most sense from a volume perspective, from a distance perspective, from where do you have the biggest driver shortage. And that's how we aligned on Dallas to Atlanta for one of our launch lanes. In addition to Dallas to Houston, of course, as you said, it's a very interesting lane. But I firmly believe that the longer the lane, the bigger will be the benefits from autonomous trucks. And hence we want to focus more on those than like the lanes that I can turn in one day anyways.
So it makes perfect sense. And I'll give you just some stats. And this started, I'm still involved in the trucking industry. I know the average age now of a CDL holder, I think, is running around 47 to 49. And just think about that. What do you think the average age of even a doctor is? It isn't 47, 49. How about a warehouse worker? It's in the 20s. Secondly, every driver wants a local or maybe regional. Maybe they have to sleep a night or two. But no one wants to drive OTR. And when I mean OTR, I mean pick up a load in California and take it to Atlanta. Then leave Atlanta and go to Chicago. Those jobs are just hard to fill because no one... The rule back when OTR was humming, you would have 11 days on, 3 days off. So you would disappear for 11 days. And then towards the end of your 11, they'd give you a load to get you back towards your house. Let's say it's in Houston with Manuel. Boom. So those drivers are just impossible to find with a turnover of over 200%. So definitely is the right group to attack first. Because OTR drivers are hard to find. The second thing, if you get the driver out of there, you don't have to take a break, okay?
Exactly.
So I don't know if you know, there are companies like, I shouldn't mention them. Well, let me not mention any company that I don't want to come after. There are companies that specialize in teams. Again, they charge a very pretty penny for teams. If your truck doesn't have to stop, but for fuel... And let's address fuel in a minute. That just came up to mind. You are onto something there. So let's play the scenario. You can now pull the driver out. How do you fuel the truck?
Yeah, great question. So, right, when you think about the kind of the end-to-end journey of an autonomous truck, now, there are some elements that always have to be done, even though there's no driver. Let's call it a pre and a post-trip inspection, right? Those things need to happen. And the same will be with getting fuel. That needs to happen. So the way we approach it, and it's a little bit different customer by customer. Some people think about it as, oh, we will basically launch. When I say launch, it means inspect the truck, get it ready for operating driverlessly on our own lot. And on our own lots, we actually have fuel available as well, because we already operate those lots as kind of, you know, the starting points for our loads anyways. So some of those will say, well, I will have somebody on site who does the manual processes, be it inspection, be it fuel, be it some minor maintenance anyways. There are other customers who think about it a little bit differently, and they say, well, what I would like to do is kind of, I would like to break up a lane into two or three segments, right? That means you have a first segment, kind of a dreher segment, where a human driver actually brings a trailer from, let's call it the shipper's warehouse, to a centralized facility. And then the autonomous truck kind of takes over, does like the long haul driving. And then there's a third segment again, driven by a human driver. Now, in that centralized facility that I mentioned, you can actually do those processes like fueling. And for example, we have a partnership with Pilot Flying J, where we say, okay, what does the truck stop of the future look like? What would they have to do in order to be able to launch, land, fuel, support autonomous trucks from their own travel centers? Right. So that's all ongoing work. And as I said, it really depends on how the customer wants to design the supply chain in the future. We as a technology provider don't want to prescribe, hey, this is how you have to run your operations, right? We want to be an additional mode of operation, just like intermodal was back in the day when that was developed. But they will eventually have to say in how they want to do it.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that intermodal was broken in 1989 with J.B. Hunt and BNSF. Very aware. I worked in intermodal for a while. I get that part, and I get the spoken hub where you bring them all. They have drivers do the pickups, bring them all, deliver them, and move. The fueling part is where I think at some point, as autonomous trucks enter, the Flying J's or the pilots or your TAs or anyone else will have a system where someone pumps your gas in Jersey. So there's an autonomous truck coming. You're going to send them an ETA. Okay, I'm the customer now, so I'll tell you what I would ask you. Hey, you send Pilot NJ, someone will be there, and they're going to need 52 gallons, okay? And they'll be there in 15 minutes. So they're going to send some guy out there, maybe by an hour, and they're going to charge us more for that fuel. But at the end of the day, and this is the hard part that people are going to have to swallow, is when you look at a trucking company, 35% of your revenue is driver pay. So whatever you pay for that guy to walk out to the pump is a small pittance compared to everything else. And I'm not saying every drivers are going away, so I don't want the drivers to come attack me in my pod. I am just saying there is a huge component of driver pay that's tied into your total. Out of every dollar, it's about 35 cents. So yes, and I think they will accommodate that. Again, they pump your gas for you in New Jersey. I think as these things transition, just like they did with electric cars, which I don't think electric trucks are long-term, and that's for another, we had in another podcast, but they have stations. So I guess they would have people there that you could coordinate with in some electronic way, and they could fuel it. So I'm not that concerned with that. So no, that's
okay. Ken, the exciting thing about this, and you are spot on, but the exciting thing about this is, let's say there are those facilities, be the Flying J or be the customer-owned facility where the autonomous truck is, you know, inspected, fueled, and so on. That actually creates local driver jobs, right? Because these need to be CDL holders that maneuver the truck within those kind of infrastructures. So again, now we have actually, let's call it, you know, removed some of the long haul jobs that nobody wants to do anymore anyways. And we have created a local job. So really from a driver perspective, it's about thinking which additional effects will autonomous trucks have. And there are a lot of positive effects for those drivers. Or if somebody wants to split up the lane into those three segments, as I mentioned, right, you are creating local jobs because you need somebody to do like the triage on the first mile and the triage on the last mile. So again, you have created jobs that drivers actually want to take. And you have only taken on the part that nobody's always wrong, but most of the people don't want to do it anymore.
There isn't a lot of drivers that I think you're hard pressed to find. And I think it's a litany of things that have got drivers to the point where they don't live in a truck. Remember when we had the first wave of truck drivers, they were all coming back from Vietnam. Okay. And then you had another wave of military people after the Desert Storm. Now, the one thing those two group of people have in common, they used to being away from home. Those days are gone, okay? And the wave of people coming out of Afghanistan and Iraq have zero interest in driving. And because you have a hard time pulling people into the driving job. And the main reason is you have to be 21 that's changed in some states now, but you go back 3 years, it'll be 21 to drive a truck. So if you're 18 and you didn't want to go to college and you wanted a job, you couldn't drive a truck. So you had to go do something else. So then whatever you do, I had to try to steal you back at 21 from that career in order to get you. And that has also hurt trucking. So no, I think those things are all positive things for the driver, for people being home, and for keeping people off the road for the long length of times. And those are the ones where people fall asleep on, those long overnight runs. The guy that's driving during the day and sleeping in his own bed is a lot more attentive, things of that nature. And that's in the cities where you need to be more and more attentive off when you're doing that drayage, that P&D, pickup and delivery type freight. So, yeah, that makes great sense. So tell me something. So tell me, what haven't we covered about you that you guys offer? Let me know. Tell me something else you guys have. Tell me what else you want to add to it.
I mean, it really, it is, I think the way to describe it perfectly is autonomous technology is here, right? The technology is working. It's not like 5 years away anymore. And we fully understand there have been lots of promises over the last, let's call it decade, right? But really 2025 is the year of autonomy. And so you will see those autonomous trucks. You will see initial use cases where it's fully operated without a driver, like in our industrial kind of private road environment. But you will also see, you know, in the next, let's call it 18, 24 months, you will certainly see some companies taking out the driver out of their truck on public roads. So this is a pretty exciting step. And the thing that I always encourage people about is, you know, be ready for that transition, because it can help you as a fleet to, you know, increase your revenue because you have a way to work against the driver shortage, right? It can help you be more efficient, more fuel efficient, if so will, because now think about it. If you don't have a driver that needs to lay over, let's say, you know, 10 hours to do their reset in Atlanta, well, during their reset, very often there's a lot of idling, right? If you look at the stats, there are some statistics out there. A long haul truck uses roughly 8% of all the fuel it consumes over the year, only on idling. So now think about taking away those 8% of idling, right? That's a huge cost benefit. That's a huge fuel reduction and carbon emission reduction benefit, right? So, and then of course, take the benefit of taking away some accidents that are caused by human error. And as you said it before, very many of those, of course, caused by distraction. So you have more efficient, you have the chance to generate more revenue, and you will actually have safer operations with less accidents, meaning, which everyone cares about, less nuclear verdicts in the long run, right? You have actually really improved your operations. And not only, so that's why I always encourage people to not only just look at kind of the direct cost comparison, autonomous system versus a human driver, there's really many, many more things that you need to think about.
Well, there's, I mean, I'll give you a big one from what you just said. So, and I've been in the brokerage business since I left actual trucking in 2019. So my hours of service may be off. It used to be you can work 14, drive 11, 10 off. That used to be what it was. I hope I think it's still that. So you think about if you can drive 11 and off 10, you actually don't need to off 10. So you actually can double your revenue per truck.
Exactly.
Or 47%. You can do the math. You're the engineer. First thing you knock out right off the bat. Second thing you knock out, if you go to any fleet, let's say I have 30 trucks, they're 3 or 4 empty without a driver. You now no longer have an empty truck. So if you put those together with the 11 hours driving, 10 off, I think you double your revenue if you have the freight available.
So, I think it can be even more than double.
Yes,
because it could be more, because the thing that we haven't discussed yet, and I'm not going to make this point because of against drivers or anything like that. But some of the deadhead in the system is induced because you want to get a driver home, right? And sometimes you don't have a load. So, you know, you send the driver home empty. So just think about that. Some public companies report their deadhead numbers like somewhere 10, 12% range. So think about that. Just take away 50% of that deadhead and actually replacing it with freight that makes revenue, right? So that's what I'm saying. There are other effects that can get you above 2.x revenue.
It's one of that. And let's go back. And I don't know what the stats are and what they keep in an OTR driver. It used to be 11 and 3. Okay. The three that are off are no longer off. So you add those three into your mix too. Yep. That's three more days. Okay. So yeah, a lot of things there. Definitely is going to gain a lot of efficiency for trucking companies. Definitely going to control some costs, lower some costs. But more importantly, I think it will improve the revenue. Now, like anything else, make no mistake, the customers are as savvy as the trucking companies. They're definitely going to come back and want to lower the rate. So as I think this is the chicken and egg thing, it's just the way our industry works. But I like what you have to say. I'm very intrigued. And you should definitely, I'm going to tell Manuel it's over. I would love to get some videos of your autonomous trucks running around the basin of Texas. I think that would be great that we could maybe upload. It doesn't have to be with the podcast and that, but I'll talk to them offline about that. But with that closing, Michael, is there anything else you want to say before I do a little wrap up here at the end? I just don't want to go over our time limit. And so Mike is
I appreciate the opportunity coming on the podcast. The one thing I will say, aside from all the benefits that we just discussed, really, the safety benefit is critical for the carrier, but also to society, right? And I think that's something that's kind of our guiding North Star. We want to make transportation safer, and everything, all the other effects kind of come as cherry on top. But of course, economically, they are sometimes, you know, critically important to a carrier to even get involved in that. But I think it will really change transportation, how we know it today. And I think if we all are here talking about this in 10 years, we will look back and say, oh my God, how have we even been living without autonomous trucks? And we will all be really happy that they are there.
I think, yes, I think it's going to lower insurance a ton. The numbers, is it 3,200 accidents, all accidents on the highways a day? It's a crazy number. When you think about a trucking company and what you cost for insurance, repair, down trucks, things of that nature, I don't know what is the percentage that you guys would reduce of accidents caused by trucks. I'd love to know that, if you know it off the top of your head, what you think that number may be. But there is a lot of savings there also, just in the accidents that's caused. Like we talk about the phone, the inattention, thing, phone, eat in, dropping things, reaching for it, all those things cause accidents today. Now, they have been limited since some of the pre-autonomous technologies out there. That's where the truck will brake for you and things of that nature. So it's not as bad, but it's still there. And I think there's some savings there. So I give you the last word. What else you got?
Just to answer your question, we're actually working actively with insurance companies on some modeling, right? But modeling always takes long-term data. So this will be developed over the next couple of years where we can then really prove out how accidents rates are going down, which will then have an effect on the insurance rates also going down, or at least not going up anymore, right? Because we all know they have just kept going up and going up and going up.
It's out of control.
Exactly.
And even pay insurance on that truck that's not running. So it's crazy. All right. Well, thank you so much for being in the Hall of Fame. Michael from Kodiak, great company. Check out their website. When we load their podcast, we'll put their social media and everything available so you guys can pull the information you need. And thank you, sir, for being part of the Hall of Fame.